This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today I'm talking to Ray Del Bianco. She's the author of a book called Rough Animals. It's a novel. I think this is, Ray, your first book, and I'm really happy to talk to you about it.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, David. It is my first book.
And I think it's an amazing book, and I think, you know, it's hard not to talk about the fact that you are fairly young and that this being your first book, you've packed a lot of stuff into this book. And, you know, I think anyone would want to kind of understand your background and how you got to the place where this book takes place. So let's talk a little bit about the setting of the book. Is a pretty rugged part of Utah called Box Elder County. And the story revolves around this young pair of twins. They're 17 as the book opens, and they live on this ranch, farm ranch, in kind of wilderness area, really isolated. And I guess I have to ask you, since, you know, I looked you up a little, you're from the East, how did you get to in your imagination, what got you to Utah, to this kind of desolate place?
So I'd say that my major influence on the writing side would be Cormac McCarthy. And that's, I definitely developed a love of the West from reading that and reading, especially Blood Meridian and his other works. And I after studying his work in college, I did a trip out to Utah and was so absolutely struck by the way that the desert is an almost more foreign set of landscapes than anywhere else I've ever experienced on Earth. And on top of the desert and moving back into Box Elder in this rugged mountain area, I grew up raising beef cattle on a farm and, you know, doing it all from scratch on my own. My parents weren't farmers. So as kids, we experimented getting animals for the first time, and everything from wrangling cattle and getting the dirt under your nails and learning to string an electric fence, and that brusqueness and that viscerality was all what I brought to Box Elder. And I felt that finding these isolated rural communities, there's a common thread there in the smells, the feels. And I've actually never had the privilege of going to Box Elder, but it felt like home when I looked at it from the ground up in those details.
Yeah, well, the writing in this book is really powerful and kind of magical. You definitely, as a reader, if you've read Cormac McCarthy, it comes across that you have as well. The kind of, and there's a certain amount of darkness and brutality in McCarthy that is in your work as well. That's, you know, it's pretty powerful. And the, a lot of the writing is kind of dream state, almost, set piece where you're just, but there's page upon page of this kind of vivid descriptive language, both inner and outer. And I thought that was, it was very striking. So let's talk a little bit about the stories and the characters. You start this with the twins, Wyatt and Lucy, and a lot of the book is about their relationship. Is that an experience that you also have had, or is that something else that you created from imagination?
I'd say it's absolutely a combination of things. I have one sister, but many of my friendships take that brotherhood aspect on. And in addition to that, one of my major experiences, you know, growing older, especially in a very quiet, rural, conservative community, was then realizing that many people and many things were not exactly what they seemed. And in the challenge between Wyatt and Lucy, when you are so thoroughly defined by another person, I wanted to see if it were possible that you could cope with or even succeed in taking a look and seeing if this other person was actually different than you thought, and evaluating whether you had to reinvent yourself, whether your belief system was shaken, or whether you could love this person anyway. And I thought that was growing at my age. I wrote this novel at 23, and it felt like a readjustment of my look at the world, my look at friendships and relationships, was seeing people's flaws and, you know, continuing to appreciate despite.
Well, but you know, the way the, I guess what I was thinking about in terms of the twinness was your, the Wyatt and Lucy's sense of being one person. I thought that was a really interesting take on, you know, siblings who are, because they come from one egg, essentially, you know, mm-hmm. never feeling like they can't really understand the boundaries between them.
Yeah, so that is not something I've had a personal experience with, but I've really enjoyed writing both of them and understanding what that kind of relationship would be like. I did interview sets of twins to confirm if my suspicions were right, that it was this level of connectedness. And that was really enjoyable to do.
So in the story, you know, they come face to face with this very strange character, and it's hard not to ask you about her as well. You know, she's a 14-year-old girl who we learn, I mean, at the beginning, she's like a waif, you know, a kind of almost, mm-hmm. and as your book is called, I mean, I actually thought of this then, Rough Animals, she is actually almost at the beginning, you think of her almost as feral, as animal, you know, not human almost, because she is capable of such amazing kind of physical and almost superhuman actions. And you sort of, she comes across as almost a mystical character, you know, and she plays this role in the book of being so unusual and kind of she's carrying like another, almost another beingness into the story. Maybe you could talk about her a little bit.
Absolutely. So her story is actually drawn from an experience I had in Bali. I was spending time there writing after college while another friend was working on a building project. And we were living in Canggu. It's near Seminyak, and it's a gang-run neighborhood, and you know, on the outskirts of the tourist area. And living there and writing and being exposed to the neighborhood and seeing the people that hung around, there was a young ecstasy dealer who was 14 and would work that area of the street. And it was so striking to see someone who was in an extremely compromised position and, you know, clearly had no say over their life or their position or how they'd ended up there and, you know, stuck in this gang. But in the way that this child would interact with the people on the street, the people that, you know, gave them orders and whatnot, and the people walking around, they had an enormous amount of personal power in being able to predict people's reactions and manipulate them. And it was such a fascinating spark to see someone in such a compromised position showing this flash of full empowerment. And I quite liked the idea of showing someone whose life had already been condemned, but in these moments were able to have absolute power. And that's where the girl came from me. And I took that and expanded that. And it's almost a reimagining of this Balinese child in a way that if they had been able to have more physical power and were able to unleash this potential to a higher degree, what could have become of it?
Right. Well, she does have, you know, I mean, she is a very powerful character. She's 14 years old. Am I correct? She's still 14 in the, mm-hmm. in the book. So very
yeah.
young. And as she is, you know, I guess the setting we should probably mention is that she comes to Lucy and Wyatt's ranch and ends up killing some of their animals, their cows. And, mm-hmm. and that kind of sets the storyline because Wyatt gets shot in the arm. They have this gun battle. She takes off and he feels like in order to save the ranch, he has to go. And it's almost kind of because he's so naive in a way and so simple, his understanding is clear, but, you know, not nuanced. He just, all he wants is to get the money from her to reimburse for the lost steers. And that sets him on this journey, a pretty horrific journey, as it turns out, which, you know, we probably don't want to give too much away, but it, you know, it's his quest. You know, he's on a quest, and his goal is a very simple one. But it gets, life gets really complicated for him. And there's a lot of violence, and there's, but it, relating back to the girl, she turns out to have been the daughter of a cartel leader. I guess it's okay to say that.
Yeah, that's fine.
And that what's going on is that Wyatt ends up in the middle of her situation, which has to do with a really complicated, essentially gang war between cartels. And there are a lot of characters along the way that are, that they both are involved in, who become, let's say, casualties to the epic quest that Wyatt is on, and that ends up enlisting her in a way in his story, as he becomes enlisted in her story. I think that's
absolutely
really interesting that, you know, they become entwined. Meanwhile, Lucy, his sister, is left behind on the ranch. So she becomes part of his, it's almost like she's now in his dream state, remembering her, and because they're not, they've never been apart before, it's really complicated for him. But the quest entangles him in this girl's, own drama, which is pretty extreme. But maybe you could talk, I guess the part that I really am interested in is how she and Wyatt become linked together. And maybe, you know, maybe you could talk a little bit about what that means spiritually, let's say, to you.
Absolutely. I saw a parallel as Wyatt departed the ranch and gradually becomes closer and closer with the girl of the two kinds of this almost the sister relationship and the departing from Lucy and nearing the girl. And Lucy, I think it's okay to reveal, is, you know, resulting from an earlier tragedy, is very quiet, very shell-shocked, very changed from the outspoken wild child that Wyatt grew up beside. And the girl is on the other end of the spectrum, a complete liberation, although in a very negative sense in terms of what she does. She's, you know, absolutely not a morally admirable character. But as far as those relationships, I was very, very interested in looking at the spectrum of morality, and especially given a Badlands area like the West in that chaos, in that anarchy, of where do moral values align with personal values and personal relationships, and really above all, how far will you go for what you care about? And in many cases, the relationship between Wyatt and the girl is one of maneuvering what is best for me, and how can I best use this situation to get the thing that matters most to me. And for Wyatt, it's how can he get them, he pushes aside right and wrong in several cases in order to do what gives him the greatest chance to get this money. But there is that other element of where do we place importance? And when you've already stepped off into this world of open badness and open evil and open violence, where do you draw the line, or do you not draw a line? And well, that's what happens between them.
Right. Although she has absolutely no moral compass. Her view, her only view is driven by what's survival for her and what is necessary for her in order to maintain her being. And she's in a situation, and I guess in a way, both of them, you've placed them both in peril. She's been in peril since she was born, so she becomes who she is in order to save herself. She's basically just in survival mode at all times. So morality almost doesn't come into play for her. It's just about what do you need to do to stay alive? And in order to do that, you have to become this other being or this being that she is. And it's really kind of without reference to morality. Amoral is more what she is. But Wyatt has, you know, you feel like he comes from a different place. He's coming from a place of, well, not necessarily comfort, but he certainly understands what morality is, because he has this, he has a strong moral sense that she stole from him, therefore she needs to pay him back. But as you say, he's faced then with quite a few challenges that have to do with his moral compass. But he's essentially, you've put him in the same position that she's in, and that is he has to make decisions about what will save his life. And in that way, I think very similar to Cormac McCarthy, in that you, you know, you're dealing with issues of survival and kind of the question of what is morality in the face of, you know, threat, dire threat to your life.
Absolutely. And are they at odds with each other or not?
Right. Or how do they, I mean, it's, you know, you kind of challenge the simplistic view that, you know, morality should trump survival. Because it isn't that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think most people don't, most of us don't face these kinds of circumstances. So, you know, you've placed them in extreme circumstances in order to, in a, some ways, to exaggerate the plight to make it clearer what their decisions have to be about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not a whole lot of subtlety in their decision making in those points.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely does. You know, it takes an extreme situation to have to, you know, force everyone to throw out their previously held misconceptions about where they might stand, were they in that high pressure situation. And I enjoy putting characters in those positions in which they have no option but to be genuine in what they're doing.
Right. Which is pretty, I think that's pretty interesting. And I also think that, you know, there, again, without giving, you don't want to give away too much storyline, but in broad terms, I think that the two, if we look at Wyatt and this kind of feral girl character as the main characters in the story, which I think they are, they, against all, you know, your expectations, I think that, you know, again, I don't want to give too much away, but for readers, I think as you go along, you don't expect them to develop any kind of relationship other than as adversaries. And so I think it becomes really interesting to see how their storylines entwine, not just in the sense of what they're each after, but in the sense of how they end up relating to each other. If that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe two.
No, absolutely.
I mean, I don't.
I think.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I'm sort of speaking elliptically because I don't want to give away something that it's just that I don't want anyone who's reading the book to feel like we've told them about the story too much.
Oh, and understandably, I think one thing that I can say without giving anything away is that either. The characters are defined by these enormously high pressure situations, but there are moments in which on this enormous odyssey down west, there are moments in which people must be real people for a moment again. And whether it's through conversation or accidentally revealing a bit of your past, these interactions do build, and it could be something even more adversarial. It could be something more like friendship, but, I was interested in the aftermath after you survive a gun battle with someone. What then do you talk about? Or what now have you revealed about yourself?
Right. By the way, have you never been shot by, have you?
I have not been shot. I have shot a gun. I have not been shot.
Right. No, those
book
are
research only goes so far.
Right. No, those two things are really, you know, completely different, obviously. But you
very
know,
much so.
It's I have never been shot, so I have no concept whatsoever of what it feels like. But you know, that I think is by itself an act of extreme imagination to be able to you know, to write about how it feels and what go, you know, what happens. So, and plus I think there's a lot of kind of realistic violence in the book. And I just, you know, I had to wonder if you'd ever experienced any of that.
So I think a lot of my experience and description of the book, it's from a very almost molecular level. It's very much sensory in terms of the smells, the sights, the colors. So while I haven't been involved in violence at a large scale, we're living on a farm and growing up on a farm. There's a lot of accidental violence that happens. And that was actually where Lucy was drawn from. It was difficult as a teenager to be raising cattle to butcher them. But what was more difficult was the accidents that happened along the way, hitting a snake with a mower blade accidentally. There was one time when I was 15 and accidentally took out a nest of baby bunnies with a pitchfork. And that sort of violence really seared itself in my mind. And you can absolutely recreate those experiences on a level of human violence with cattle. And then also in turn, the gut reactions to that violence and the way that some people are able to harden themselves to it. Some people are able to see it as efficacy and necessity, and other ones perhaps, in potentially Lucy's case, take it as kind of a condemnation of who we are as people and what the killing that we're forced to do merely by existing.
Yes. No, I agree. I think that, I mean, this is very broadly generalized, but I think that, you know, having spent some time in the West, having spent time on farms myself with farmers, with people who work physically with animals and on the land, that there is a palpably different understanding of how nature operates when you are mm-hmm. close to it. And especially if you're in a place like the Utah, I've not spent a lot of time there, but in Arizona, New Mexico, Western Texas, very dry, very big and difficult to traverse. And I think that there, if you live there or if you spend time there literally on the land, this sense of danger and the, you know, kind of the closeness that you have to violence or to life and death, as you say, I think that's really a different understanding of how humanity operates, you know, how much closer to animals we actually are. And maybe that's, mm-hmm. you know, the point of the title of your book, even.
Very much so.
Yeah. So now it's natural to ask, and I don't want to push too hard, but having written this, are you, and of course the book is, you know, when the book comes out, you'll spend time reading and talking and interacting with people about the book, but are you thinking about what you will do next? Do you have another book in mind?
Yes. I don't know when it'll be finished, but I have gotten started on it. And it's takes on the opioid crisis, bull riding, and the youth livestock show circuit.
Well, that's, yeah. Well, so this book takes on methamphetamines. So I guess, maybe you have a theme, you know, a running theme you'll be able to work with. Yeah, you'll become expert in drug paraphernalia, unfortunately.
I've had some unfortunate YouTube searches to try to research that. It's been, I am fascinated with people on the outskirts and margins of society and what happens with those that we forget. And I think that's absolutely a continuing theme between these two and this rural underworld culture that I enjoy looking at.
So the second book, it sounds like that also will be set in a Western environment, if you're talking about youth rodeo and stuff.
Yeah, I'm actually in North Carolina.
Oh.
Probably.
Interesting.
Yeah, taking it east. That was where my experiences up and down the East Coast is this livestock showing, as well as I spent time, you know, visiting the bull riding and the rodeos, and that was a large part of my childhood. So, yeah, absolutely still that rural culture, but a bit more gritty trailer park world and less expansive, massive Western landscapes.
Right. Well, yes. And, landscape, I think, is really, an important feature of your work. So it'll be interesting to see how you treat with, you know, a more, like the Southeast is wetter and richer and more fertile. So maybe that changes your outlook on the writing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not far enough into it to have really experienced that change, but I'm sure it will happen. And then when the landscape makes up as much of a character in itself as I believe it does in my writing, it will certainly have to be a different character in this one.
Right.
And I'm excited to see how that develops.
So do you have time to read just a little bit from Rough Animals? Is there, I mean, a handy section that you could read from that might evoke the style for our listeners?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to, I'm pulling it up right now, I'd be happy to read from a middle section or from the very beginning if you'd prefer that.
Up to you completely. Your choice.
Okay, I will start with the beginning in that case.
Okay.
One moment.
Yeah, I didn't mean to spring that on you unsuspecting, but I thought it would. The writing is really luminous and powerful, and I think that it's important to let people hear some of your words.
Well, thank you so much. So going into this, I'm not going to read the entire epigraph, but I did just want to mention that the book begins with a poem, In a Gentis, by Roger Reeves. And the last line is, "The dead are a rough animal with very little grace." And that very much for me set off the direction the title was in. So, Chapter 1, Box Elder County, Utah. It was before dawn when Smith walked out, and a full 2 hours before the sunlight would be high enough to strip across the tops of the cliffs beyond. A flock of starlings pulled out from a scrub oak as he passed and went tittering across the sky, black-winged, like bats or demons born back to hell before daybreak. He held a 10-gauge horizontal in his right hand, too big for birds, but that was what the old man had left him, and so he had to make do with taking the harder shot and blowing the head off supper. He spat and shuffled his boots through the wheat, or rather stepped large, but the reeds still made a swish against the oiled leather as if he'd scuffed them along. Blades of yellow grass for gods or giants. The cattle grazed up ahead. The sky was melting from black to clouded gray, like an exhaust pipe being wiped clean. He'd been walking for the better part of an hour now. It was not quite light enough to see the beasts along the edge of the hill, but he could feel them there. He slung the shotgun over his shoulder as he waited in the dew-washed crop, ran his hand over the thin suggestion of a beard in a face that was wind-marked hard and tanned dark as his boots, but still young, 23. A face with a seriousness that belonged to the rock and those fossilized within it, marred in its earthiness only by the blue glass eye in his left socket. It was the color of a bird's wing, fit badly, and clashed with the soil brown of the right. The dew was mounting into the air with the coming warmth of day, and the mist was now knee-high, and flies rose behind his steps, lost hunters awakening from whatever patches of dark they are made of, or wherever flies sleep. He lifted his flashlight half out of boredom and half out of a sense of something else, and one of the steers turned its head and gave him its eye, flashed back as an amphibious green glow. It lowed and shifted on, and the others started to low and shift. He deadened the light, no sense in illuminating what he knew was there. Put the flashlight half in a coat pocket. Ferric smell as he approached. he'd closed in the last few hundred yards, and the cattle steamed a bit in the gray as if it emanated from their hides. But a damp iron smell burned the nose. He crossed over the top of the ridge, and the animals lumbered on, even when he stopped dead and lost his breath. One of the herd, a mid-sized steer, down with a bullet in its forehead.
Really good. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was really, I like that. Yeah, it reminded me actually.
Thanks
just
very much.
Just then it reminded me, there's another scene in which they're in the desert, and I think you have some blood dripping into the ground, and to describe these kind of minute, I don't know, worms or bugs that kind of come to life, you know, only when they get moisture. And I thought that scene just then reminded me of that. I'm not sure why. But anyway, I think you're
I like that.
Yeah, your sense of detail, I think, is really important. And I appreciate that in reading about places and where the story takes place, you know, you have to think about what is going on around the characters, like what is setting them in motion and what is, proceeding and preceding from in front of them. So anyway, I think it was really
absolutely
good.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. This has been Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk. I've been talking to Rae Del Bianco about her novel, Rough Animals.